Good afternoon and welcome to the latest edition of the Star Blades. Finally, we actually have some football to talk about, but unfortunately, the first few minutes are going to seem like the opening of an inquest. James, we'll go straight to you, to Derby. What happened?
Well, I think in short, the answer is not a lot. Sheffield United went into the game, as we know, on the back of some really, really good results, on the back of probably their best result of the not only the Paul Heckingbottom era, but the season so far, beating Fulham at Craven Cottage. So you looked at that match. Yes, I understand that Derby are in probably, in terms of their form, a false position in the table. Obviously, they would have been level on points had it not been for the points deductions that they've suffered. But Sheffield United were really poor in that game. It was a forgettable first half. And then in the second, once Derby went in front, they just didn't really get going, and their race looked run at that point, which was really disappointing, because they've shown a lot of fight under Paul Heckingbottom. They've shown a lot of good work, produced a lot of good work. So that was surprising. You hoped it was going to be an anomaly, particularly with Paul missing the game because he tested positive for COVID-19, of course. And for the first half at Preston on Tuesday, it looked as if it was. Thought Sheffield United played really well there, created a lot of chances. Yes, Preston created chances themselves. Raced into a two-goal lead. I already had the match report written. Sat there thinking, this looks really nice. Got plenty of time to try and craft something better than usual. Then two goals from 10-man Preston North End, basically force an immediate rewrite, and lots of gnashing of teeth in the away end and the away dugout.
Definitely. Chris, obviously Derby lost Phil Jagielka, I think about 24 hours before that game. I think it came out when we were on this podcast. Given, I know James made the point that, you know, minus those points deductions or without them, they would be in the same position. But that, to me, still feels like a big disappointment to go there and get beaten like that.
Yeah, I think it was the performance more than anything. If they'd have gone down there and put up a bit of a fight and found themselves on the wrong end of a defeat by the odd goal or something, I think you could probably just hold your hands up and say, look, they're too... It shouldn't be the case, but certainly in terms of form and what has been shown this season, there's two fairly equal teams, to be honest. So I think it was just the manner in which they lost that was probably most disappointing. I wasn't at the game. Danny and James were both at it, but from having seen the highlights since, it just looked like United had nothing really about them at all, which was as James says, was surprising, because even in the game against Wolves, they were soundly beaten, but they weren't played off the park, and they played quite well in fits and starts in that FA Cup match, but you kind of looked at that and went, right, okay, they've got rid of the ring rustiness, which I think both I and, or in fact, all three of us, James, Danny and myself, have all probably written that phrase quite a lot over the past week to 10 days, or to 2 weeks or so, and it looked like that they'd probably just about got rid of that going into the Derby match, and we hoped so anyway, and then there just seemed to be nothing about them in that game. And then that kind of, as James very rightly said, from the first half, it looked like, yeah, that they did get rid of that. I thought they played quite well, to be fair. And then the backside just fell out of it in the second half, I was going to say it's bizarre, but it is something that we've seen probably a bit too often. It looked like, as James said, it looked like we they'd gone past that. They'd kind of found a little bit of resolve and a little bit of steel again. And then, on Tuesday night, they looked like children out there, frightened children. Just as soon as Preston started putting any level of pressure on them, they completely wilted, and that's. It's something that certainly, I know James has written extensively on this over the past, probably the past year or so, where there are very clearly mental aspects of the game that need to be that need to be looked into, because they don't appear to have the mental strength to deal consistently with pressure and whenever they're being put under a lot of pressure. Like I said, it looked as though they had kind of got rid of that, and we thought, right, okay, they're over it now. They're over the pains of the last 18 months or whatever since that second season in the Premier League. But then it all, the kind of, the wounds opened up again on Tuesday night.
James, do you think that result on Tuesday, I know we perhaps shouldn't read too much into individual results, but it feels quite typical of the season and the way things have gone. There's a bit of false hope in there, and then it all kind of comes crashing back down, and all of a sudden it feels like we're back to square one before this this run of four wins in a row under, well, I think one of them was under Slav. Paul took over, but am I reading too much into that?
No, you're not, because I think it's important to say that, you know, I mean, let's scroll right the way back to the start of the season. And Slavisa Jokanović, I know publicly he said, you know, I think this squad is good enough to get up. I think we can do something with it. I think I can do something with it. Privately, you know, I think he felt that it needed just a little bit of shaking up. It needed a little bit of freshening up. And that happened to some degree, albeit using loans, happened too late for Slavisa Jokanović's liking. That much is pretty clear. But even then, there were sort of fits and starts, as you said. I mean, there was that game against Peterborough early this season when, you know, they absolutely swept Darren Ferguson's side, you know, swept him aside, and you thought, right, this is it. I can remember people talking about this is Slavisa ball, and then nothing really happened sort of after that either. And now Paul's come in, got off to a really, you know, strong start, as I think we all thought he would, because he's got the advantage of knowing the players and having worked with them before in real match situations. I'm not talking about pre-season friendlies. And probably the experience as well of using and working with a squad that was essentially engineered and crafted by somebody else. And then, you know, yeah, then they come up with something like they did in the second half at Deepdale this week. I mean, listen, make no mistake, Preston deserved something from that game, the way they performed in the second half. I know I've heard sort of people saying, well, it was the last 20 minutes of the half that really cost Sheffield United. I must admit, listen, it's a game of opinions, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of people out there who disagree with me, but I think it was actually all of the second half. I think Preston came out with a real intent. I know Paul Heckingbottom, who's got a duty to try and, you know, defend his players, especially so early into his reign. You know, I know he felt it was the final 20 minutes that really did for him. I didn't think it was. Preston came out and were everything that Sheffield United weren't right from the off. And I think if that game had gone on for another 10 or so minutes, I think they would have actually gone on to win, because Sheffield United were just all over the place, and the dynamic of the game had just changed beyond all recognition. And because they had such an experienced side out there, you know, I mean, these are players who should know, who do know, not should, do know how to see games and situations like that out. And that's why I just wonder if, I'm not saying there aren't good players there, because there are, we know that. But I just wonder if some of them would benefit from, you know, a fresh sort of environment, some fresh surroundings themselves that have been there a long time, and the ones that remain would benefit just for some new faces, some new ideas, and even some sort of new jokes in the dressing room, as it were, because it just felt a little bit stale as well at Preston during the second half. And there's a reason why managers like to refresh their squads during a transfer window, and that's because it's a good idea. That's because it works and it's needed.
I did nearly came up with a phrase for this podcast saying someone needs to take a shotgun to this group, but I didn't mean it in that way. I meant it in as far as someone needs to come in and clear the decks quite quickly, I think. It's Luton at home tomorrow. Home advantage, Chris, I've just been looking. One of Danny's stories says it's the first time the Blazers will have been at home since late November, which is crazy, really. Obviously, Luton are on a good run. They beat Reading 2-0 on Tuesday or Wednesday. Probably their best win of the season last weekend against Bournemouth. But I feel like that home advantage could actually be really important for Sheffield United tomorrow.
Well, it should be, but unfortunately, because of the results over the past couple of weeks, I'm expecting, although there should be a really good crowd at Bramall Lane, given the length of time that home fans have been away from the ground. I'm expecting it maybe to be a little bit nervy and maybe possibly a little bit flat because of that. And I do have a concern that might find its way onto the pitch as well. It's just one of those things that fans will have been waiting so long to finally get out in their numbers to watch United. But with the way things have gone in the past couple of games, and it's a shame really, because everybody's forgotten the good work that Paul did in those first few weeks before they were forced to have a break through no fault of their own. And so it is a shame that fans haven't been able to go there and really get behind the team and get behind the manager as well, who, you know, let's be honest, he was. I don't say a better phrase is probably, but let's just say that he wouldn't have been everybody's first choice as manager. So, you know, he still has a little bit of kind of winning round to do with quite a number of fans, I would imagine. And unfortunately for him, he hasn't been able to build the momentum that he had built up in those first few games, with them not playing at all and then having to play games away from home. So it's hard to judge exactly what it's going to be like. I would like to think that the team will come out and be buoyed by having, you know, the guts of 30,000 people behind them. I'm just worried that there may be a little bit of nervousness in the stands and then that creeping onto the pitch on Saturday.
I think, you know, we often have this sort of debate, don't we, about does a crowd need to get behind a team, or does a team need to get a crowd going, or is it a combination of both? And I think I agree with Chris about the situation that United are going into now. I think this match against Luton, it's definitely a case of the latter. I think Sheffield United really need to go out and try and grab this game. I mean, I know they'll be trying to do that anyway. Of course they will. But, you know, they really need to sort of have a front foot performance and try and grab this game by the scruff of the neck and dictate the tempo and the rhythm and the pace of the game. And I think that will drag the crowd along with them, because, you know, I mean, Sheffield United supporters, of course they do want to get behind their team, and they do. You know, we've seen that before. We've seen what powerful effect it can have on results when the team and the terraces are sort of working in tandem. And I'm sure that'll happen again. I think it's really incumbent on United as players to sort of set the atmosphere of the game on Saturday. And you're right, just scrolling all the way back, it's been far too long. I mean, we spoke to Paul about this earlier this week, and he described the COVID-19 postponements and the manner in which some of them came about and the effects it's had on his team, who were trying to do the right thing, you know, and meticulously so during that wave of the pandemic. You know, and he said, it's effectively put my team at a disadvantage for trying to do the right thing. And I think he's absolutely right with that. But they've got to just forget all about that now, deal with the cards, that work with the cards that they've been dealt, and really look to nail down what you'd call a proper Sheffield United performance on Saturday. It's a big, big game, this. Context is important, because over the course of the past 5-6 games, they're actually doing really well. They're actually doing really well. But the whole mood around the season, the whole sort of narrative will begin to change again, I think, if they slip up on Saturday. So it's a big, big game, this, for a whole host of reasons.
Yeah, definitely. Comment from Paul Thomas. He says, lightweight midfield, no one can put tackles in and roll their sleeves up and get the job done. Same at Derby second half. We are live on Facebook and Twitter, by the way. So if you've got any questions, or if you just want to rant, get them in, that's fine. James, could John Fleck be the answer to Paul's, the issue that he presents there?
Well, he could be, but I think John would admit himself, he's not been in the best of form. It's not been the John Fleck that we all knew and loved during that that 2019 promotion winning season and then the first season back in the Premier League. We haven't seen that John Fleck for a long time, and we all know there's reasons for that. There's obviously been some health issues and some injury issues. So it's time for John to really do all of that, you know, to roll up his sleeves and really become the player that Sheffield United could do with in the middle of the pitch. He certainly can do it. I don't think the break will probably have done him too much harm. It's not done the momentum of the team much good, but I don't think it will have done John much harm. And if Sheffield United can get him back and firing on all cylinders, then that will be like a new signing effectively for him, won't it? Because, you know, John is a player who's really strong technically, but he's also got that sort of nasty streak about him that I think a lot of us like to see in a midfielder as well. So, yeah, fingers crossed John gets back to his best, because they need him to. And I think, you know, if he can, then you'll see even more from sort of the more creative players like Illiman and Dyer and Morgan Gibbs-White when he comes back. He's the one that Sheffield United really, really do need to get back on the pitch as quickly as possible, though, Morgan Gibbs-White, because first half at Preston accepted, you've seen how much they miss sort of that sort of verve, that elan that he brings to everything that they do. They really need to get him back out there, I think, if they're going to mount a serious push for the playoffs.
Chris, has your confidence in United's ability to push for that playoff position, even that sixth spot, which feels like a little way away at the minute, has it been damaged by the last two results?
I think it's been damaged. I still believe they're capable of doing it, but it certainly has been damaged, yeah. I think we saw, it's only for the fact that we saw bad signs, really, and really bad habits kind of creep in over the past two games. I wouldn't change my mind that I do feel that they are still well in the hunt to finish in the top six. However, obviously, because of the way they've played in the past two games, my surety, if that's a word, my assuredness and my making up two words
now.
My certainty in feeling that way has obviously been diluted a little bit because I think probably Saturday will tell a tale, really. If they bounce back from that, then perhaps I will just think, right, that's okay. They've had their couple of games to try and get themselves back into the groove again, and here they are. I mean, we're probably guilty as anybody else, really, of getting a little bit boom and bust, probably, and maybe overreacting a little bit to certain results in both ways, in thinking that everything's brilliant when they win and everything's absolutely catastrophic when they lose. We get wrapped up in it as much as normal fans, for want of a better term, do. And so it does feel like it certainly felt on Tuesday night that the whole world was crashing down. And when you compare that to the elation of whenever they beat Fulham just before Christmas, when, you know, all of a sudden this was the greatest Sheffield United team that ever existed. You know, we need to try and find this kind of middle ground. And they're not the greatest team in the league, and they're absolutely not the worst team in the league. At the minute, they're probably where they should be in the league, but they do need to try and get that consistent run of results together, because everything's just been a little bit two, maybe three good games followed by the same number of very average performances. And so I suppose that's consistency in itself, and that they follow a fairly steady pattern, but they need to go on a fairly lengthy run of good results. You're talking maybe five, six matches unbeaten, with at least kind of three or four of those being wins, to just make sure that they're just at least be on the edge of that top six by the time you come to, say, kind of mid-March, late March, just so that they can kind of make that final push. But if they find themselves where they are now, obviously, that it becomes a lot more difficult the further into the season that they get.
I think in terms of performances, the team itself could do with finding some middle ground as well, couldn't it?
Yeah, well, that's it. They're just they're without wishing to kind of without wishing to make light of anything, but there's kind of a bipolar aspect of the team a little bit at the minute, because they're just either really good or really bad. At the minute, they could do with maybe just having maybe a bit like the Cardiff game where they didn't play well. They played well. They weren't brilliant, but they grounded out, and I think they could just do with a few more of those, just to kind of show a bit of fight and nick a win here and there, just to kind of have something a little bit steady.
James, good question here from Elaine Bray. She wants to know, when will Morgan Gibbs-White be back?
Well, we keep asking about this, and it's been really difficult, both here and at Wolves, and it's been really difficult to get an exact date. I think the general consensus seems to be it'll be a couple of weeks. The very fact that we can't get a firm date, listen, I understand it's always impossible, medically speaking, to say, right, it'll be a week on Tuesday. But obviously that goes to show, I think, the problem that Morgan had was a little bit more serious than first feared. I mean, certainly he's been out for longer than was anticipated at the time. But yeah, to just, you know, without sort of prattling on too long about it, it seems to be a couple of weeks. I think that seems to be the general sort of consensus of opinion at Bramall Lane and at Wolves as well.
Question from Wayne Liversidge, Chris. Do you think Burke should go? And I'll add something to this. Do you think they should let him go to a potential promotion rival in Blackburn Rovers? I know there's another club linked today, QPR, I think.
On the one hand, I would say it would be foolish to allow any of your players to go to a potential rival. However, I think we've got to the point now where Oliver Burke has continually shown that he's not quite going to be the player that everybody thinks that they might be able to drag out. There's clearly some talent in there, but he's just not done it in consecutive teams now, and under different managers and different clubs, and so I'm not overly concerned. That's not to say, I mean, he could absolutely prove me wrong, that it could well be that he just hasn't found the right fit for him. But until he starts finishing the way, you know, if you had Oliver Burke's pace and Billy Sharp's finishing, you'd be talking about £100 million footballer probably. So unfortunately he doesn't have Billy Sharp's finishing, and that's why they're more than willing to let him go and probably not too worried about where he goes.
You can see both sides of the argument, can't you, with Ollie? Because yeah, you're right. I think he's a wonderfully gifted footballer. He really is. The trouble is, we just haven't seen it often enough. And sometimes, you know, I think Ollie's best position is probably out wide. I understand the thinking behind the decision to bring him in at the time he did and play him through the middle. But Ollie's probably best position is out wide. Sheffield United don't really play with wingers. So, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to get him into his best position is, you know, who knows. But unfortunately as well, sometimes as much as I'd love to see Ollie stay and, you know, sort of achieve, realise his potential, sometimes you've just got to deal in the real world as well. And they've got far too many strikers. Paul Heckingbottom clearly needs to let some of those attackers go before, you know, he gets the type of sort of transfer war chest that he'd want to really stamp his mark on the squad. And so Ollie, because of the way his career in South Yorkshire's gone, is inevitably going to be one of those that they'll look to move on. Because as much as it's worth talking about the future, and Sheffield United have done that in terms of bringing young players through, I'm not including Ollie in that. But you've also got to deal with the here and now as well, haven't you? And, you know, the first place you're going to look at the moment when it comes to cutting the number of attackers you've got in your squad is not Billy Sharp. You know, it's not Illiman and Dai. It's not sort of, you know, Ollie McBurney when he hopefully comes back. It is people like Ollie Burke, you know, Lees Moussai, etc., who haven't really made much of an impression in recent months.
Hard to argue with that. Paul Thomas says, if he frees up salary for replacements, it makes sense. Likewise. We'll leave it there for today. I know I've said this a few times, sound like a broken record, but hopefully the next time we do this, it'll be on a more positive note. But anyway, take care for now.